There's no question you need omega-3s. But which form should you take? Fish oil or krill oil? Scientists have debated this for years. Luckily, there's a new solution to satisfy everyone. It's called Krill Omega 50 Plus. It combines ultra-pure fish oil and joint-soothing krill oil together in just one tiny pill. It's so powerful, it can promote the health of your heart and your arteries. And if that wasn't enough, it can also boost your joint comfort in just days. We're so sure Krill Omega 50 Plus will work for you. We'll even send you a free bottle to put to the test. The debate is over. It's not fish oil or krill oil. It's both. And now it's free. Just pay $4.95 for shipping and claim your free bottle. Call now. 1-800-355-1493. 1-800-355-1493. That's 1-800-355-1493.
Good Day Health. Wow, what great things we have in the archives at gooddayhealthshow.com. So anytime you have a question about any medical procedure, you'll find it referenced at Good Day Health Show. You just have to look on the archive titles that are listed there and get information by listening to Dr. Ken Kronhaus, who's here with us in this hour, and Dr. Jack Stockwell, both important contributors with different points of view on medical issues. Ken researches what's going on in the medical journals every week, and we spend a lot of time talking about that, plus other things that are in the news that may impact or affect you. I want to sort of digress a little bit. I'm not at my best at the moment. You and I have had conversations probably half a dozen times over the past year since my friend Chris Walsh was diagnosed with this this lymphoma, melanoma. It was nasty stuff. And so he died early this morning.
Oh, boy.
And it has affected me in the sense that I want to kind of come to grips with what people really, what do you suppose? When I saw him, I visited with him in February. He was in the hospital, actually. And whenever he was in, I'd go in and I'd spend an hour or so with him. And so when I left him the last week of February, I'd come home from California, and I thought he was saying goodbye. And he told me later, he thought he was saying goodbye. But he got on to another protocol. Altogether, Ken, he went through six protocols to deal with this very aggressive form of lymphoma that he had. At one point in time, and I don't remember if I told you this or not, he had tumors under his arms the size of baseballs. He had tumors in his neck the size of golf balls. And it didn't come out on his face or other places in the body, just in the areas where the lymph collects. And that was because the lymph, as I understand it, maybe you can explain it a little bit better, the lymph nodes, and Tony had this too when she had breast cancer, the biggest problem was keeping the lymph nodes clean and clear because that's where the cancer cells would collect. Am I too simplistic in explaining it that way?
You're asking what causes lymphoma, right?
Well, yeah, and how does it manifest? What is there that's sure. collecting in those big sure. balls that were represented under his arms? And actually, Tony had them too with the lymph nodes.
Sure. The big picture is that we're really not sure what causes lymphoma, but it begins when the disease-fighting white blood cells, which are called lymphocytes, they develop genetic mutations, and the mutations tells the cell to multiply rapidly, and this causes many diseased lymphocytes that continue multiplying, and that's what you're seeing as the clumping. And the mutation also allows the cell to go on living when other cells would die, so that they not only rapidly divide, they accumulate and then clump. Yeah. And this causes too many diseased and ineffective lymphocytes in your lymph nodes and causes the lymph nodes to swell, okay?
Yeah.
Now, factors that can increase the risk of lymph nodes include your age. Some types of lymphomas are common in young people, while others occur over the age of 55. Being male is a risk factor, slightly more likely to develop lymphoma than are females. Having an impaired immune system, lymphoma is more common in people with immune system diseases or in people who take drugs that suppress their immune system. And also, not to get people anxious, but developing certain infections are associated with an increased risk of lymphoma. The virus is the Epstein-Barr virus, the Helicobacter pylori infection in the stomach. These tend to lead to these genetic abnormalities. That's the best we know about the causes of lymph nodes, and I hope I explained why you get these accumulation, these swellings in the lymph nodes.
So, yeah, so the next step here in terms of what is protocol now and how these things have changed even more recently, almost day to day. And I do think I brought this up to you when he started his last protocol. He'd been through five different things since the discovery about, was about last year at this time, when he was diagnosed with this stuff. They put him on regular chemo, and that didn't work. I tried to get him to do some homeopathic stuff along with the
Did he have a bone marrow transplant?
He didn't get that far.
He didn't get that far.
He didn't get that far. He was working on that, but he didn't. He never got that far.
Chemotherapy is the traditional initial treatment. And what's really neat now is other drug therapy, especially immunotherapy, where we make these single antibodies to the cells, and you can kill selectively these immune system cells. Sometimes radiation therapy helps, and then the last resort, a bone marrow transplant.
Yeah. Well, he was trying to get his, with the next to last protocol, so the first one was regular chemo. And then they gave him something that was really strong, that was supposed to, that had been recently developed, that was supposed to target the cells you were just talking about. And it did. But it didn't get rid of all of it. 94% of the cancer was eliminated from his body. And one of the things about it was what happens, as you were just saying, to the debris, the dead cancer cells. And this new stuff kills them so fast, the first half a dozen people that went on it died because their bodies couldn't handle fast enough getting rid of the toxic waste. So then they, with his case, he was one of the first, I don't know, 25 or 30 to get that protocol. And they made sure they monitored him every 15 minutes to make sure his body was getting rid of the toxicity. Literally, he had to flush it out of his system. And then the next treatment he had was a different kind of, he went back to chemo. And they tried to, I mean, it was back and forth. He had a white blood cell sort of transplant. They took white blood cells, and I know you and I talked about this on the air. I was trying to understand how it happened. They sent it to some laboratory in Seattle, and they enhance the white blood cells so that they become warriors, and then send it back and put it in your body and see what that does. And that knocked out a lot of it. But this cancer was so aggressive, and he said that at the beginning, very aggressive. And so in he had a treatment in January, and it killed his white blood cells. His count was zero.
What facility was he treated at?
He was at Brigham and Women's, which is Dana-Farber.
Uh-huh. So he got as good as he can get.
Yeah, commercial. He got the best commercial treatment.
It sounds like he just had unfortunately, a very aggressive form of this.
Yeah. So he was trying this more recent protocol that he started 3 weeks ago, because in February, the end of February, basically, as I said, he said goodbye. And then I get a call from him about a week later, and he sounds like a new person. And they put him on this stuff, and they said he had a 30% chance of surviving, whereas, you know, at the end of February, he had a zero chance of surviving. So at least this, I mean, we all have a zero chance of surviving when you look at it, just his timing. So anyway, he expected, because this was supposed, they were monitoring it very closely, and it was so much debris because the cancer had come back and very aggressively got at him. And so it really took, he lost 45 pounds in like a month and a half.
How old was he?
He's 66.
Oh, boy. Young guy.
Yep, a young guy. And the saddest thing about it is his wife and he have been taking care of his father, who has advanced Alzheimer's. And so now his wife's been taking care of him for a year, taking care of the father for a year. You just wonder sometimes what it is that makes all this happen. I talked to him Saturday, and he sounded weak, but he sounded okay. It wasn't like he was calling with a, you know, see you later alligator conversation.
What was his lifestyle like before he got sick?
He didn't always eat the best. He enjoyed bourbon and wine, but he wasn't. He did say to me once, he'd done some things when he was younger, and I think he was referring to drugs when he was a kid in school that he wished he hadn't done.
Uh-huh.
And I think that whether that was really what he thought caused it, and then he got philosophically says, you know what? I don't know what caused it. I just know that I got a number, and my number apparently is low. It's like he referred to it as if, you know, when we were drafted, because he and I about the same age, and we all went through the draft from the Vietnam War, and you too. He drew a low number. He was 1A with a bullet or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I look at it and I think, 4 hours ago the guy was alive and now he's dead. But his wife said he died peacefully, so that's all you can expect. But it really was kind of quick. I think he maybe he decided in February that he wasn't really gonna. He'd had enough. And then they came to him with this protocol, and he said, okay, I'll try one more. But I think that if the results weren't good or weren't as strong as he wanted them to be, he'd just say, you know what, why am I going to keep doing this? And so he didn't. Anyway, thank you for the explanation. It's lousy.
Balance of Nature's fruits and veggies.
I was surprised at myself how much energy I had. And, you know, I'm doing two jobs, running around like a maniac, and I was able to handle it. Really, I'm like, wow, this stuff is really good. So, you know, more than anything else, it's it just gave me the extra energy and the well-being, feeling of well-being that I don't think I would have without it.
Well, I take it every day, and I feel great. And my wife looks at me and says, how come you never get sick? And I do. It's because I take the fruits and veggies.
I just feel a lot better. My life has turned around. Everything is working for me.
It just helps me feel good. I just think the products are wonderful, and I take them every day. I just like it. It works.
When you call, use discount code DJV, and we'll take 35% off your first month's order and ship it to you free. Call 800-246-8751 or go online to balanceofnature.com and use discount code DJV.
Here's another focus. This is a, I'm not going to apologize for the time we spent trying to understand this non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Ken explained it, and I was just reading a little bit more online of stuff that I knew, but I couldn't remember some of the nuance. So Ken and I are talking about that with the passing of my friend Chris Walsh. Could anxiety lead to dementia? I think this has been something we've been dancing around off and on for a while, Ken. It seems to me that stress, didn't we talk about stress, and isn't anxiety a form of stress? It could be bad here.
Well, your intuition, as usual, is right on. But there's more news in this area this week. We have known that depression boosts the risk of Alzheimer's by almost twofold. But the news this week, published in the British Medical Journal, is that living with moderate to severe anxiety in midlife, Doug, may lead to dementia in later life. So how does this happen? Well, the abnormally high stress response triggered by anxiety, it might accelerate the aging process of brain cells, which in turn may speed up age-related cognitive decline. That's the loss of ability to think and remember. So what you want to do is adjust your lifestyle to lower anxiety. Use talk therapy, meditation, just adding some healthy fun to your life.
Fun. There's a lot of things that, you know, the woods are full. I was watching some phony baloney on PBS for a few minutes last night. He's just selling his product and his books and stuff. And
should have been watching baseball like I was.
Yeah, I would have. Well, I watched a couple of pretty good shows, but every once in a while I get distracted because I have a short attention span. So I click around and see what else is on. And this guy is on every once in a while. He's the biggest phony. Oh, my God. I listen to him and his bunkum, and it just drives me nuts because he gives other people who have the same sort of philosophy a bad name. He even looks like a slime wad. But these guys pay to be on PBS, and PBS is always looking for money, and they make a lot of money. When they go on PBS, they make tons of dough. So they're happy to contribute like $40,000 for an hour of time on PBS.
And what was he selling?
I'm selling some book and lifestyle and whatever. I mean, it's this. You hear the same message. All these guys have the same message. They just write it up differently. But it's the same stuff that you sit here week after week and tell people you could make a million writing a book and saying the same thing. Eat well, get enough rest, drink enough water, the Mediterranean diet. All what else is there? I mean, what else is the secret? There's no other secret, right? And there are no secrets anyway, I don't think, to this.
Exercise.
Yeah, okay. So you add that into the mix. Exercise, enough sleep, eat well, yada, yada,
watch the alcohol. Don't use drugs that are non-prescribed.
Right. Even prescribed drugs can be pretty dangerous.
Get down to ideal body weight. Watch your blood pressure, your blood sugar, your cholesterol, and you'll live long.
I lost 7 pounds in the last week. I just decided I was going to stop. I stopped eating sugar and all this stuff, just fruit and drinking. That's
it. Add some whey protein.
Yep. All right, I will. I'm Doug Steffen. We're going through a number of items that have appeared in the journals of medicine. This is one of Ken's specialties, to understand and to translate into words that we can all understand the meaning of life and helpful things that we need to maybe keep in our minds, but we don't always. We've talked off and on about my friend Chris Walsh passing away and the lymphoma that he had, and how normally he told me this, and I guess I learned it from a couple. I may have learned it from you, Ken. People, when they get this kind of an aggressive cancer, when he first learned about it, he was told that he had 3 to 4 months. Get everything in order, and he lasted over a year with it going. But going through all of those trials and stuff, he had a good philosophy about life, and didn't seem to be afraid of anything. You see this all the time. That's the thing about doctors like you, who have a specialty like this. You literally can see people drop dead in front of you. And the experience, I mean, I think I've asked you this before, how often a patient of yours dies. Not that I'm looking to use that as a bellwether as to whether to go to you or not. But on the average, you see how many patients a day? 14, 15? How many people do you see a day or a week?
It's unpredictable. But, you know, I'm pretty aggressive with my care with my patients, and I don't get that many unexpected deaths.
You don't?
And because I am pretty aggressive with my patients in terms of diagnostics. And, you know, I'm not perfect, but I don't get a lot of surprises these days because the diagnostics we have in cardiovascular therapy today is amazingly good. And occasionally I will. It bothers the heck out of me. But I rarely today, because of how good the diagnostics are, get a 3 a.m. unexpected wake-up call. But what I will see is that people who are just at the end of life, you know, they've used their bodies previously, abused them, or they've just gotten to the point where there's nothing left, nothing we can do. And we're just making people comfortable. And that definitely is part of what I do. And, you know, I have people who are in their 80s or 90s who I've known 20, 30 years. And that does take the toll out of both of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 Well, I think when you understand how precious life is and you pay attention to it, you see it all the time. But it kind of frustrates you when people don't do what you tell them to do. They know what the risk is. That's what amazes me. Why would you want, you're here to enjoy an extraordinary experience in this life.
Well, people are addicted to their bad behaviors, and you know, they just refuse to give them up. And some, you know, they've convinced themselves that they'd be happier dead than alive if they can't do what they really want to do. And eventually, often those behaviors do change, and there is a transformation, but sometimes there isn't.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to this focus on there's no week goes by we don't try to give people a lesson in E. coli, Salmonella, Listeria. This romaine lettuce thing has gotten out of hand. It just is. It's so stupid for people to use this. Why this is acceptable to seal this stuff up in a plastic container that allows the goop that's in there to grow. If they don't clean the lettuce properly. That's what this is. And the E. coli, if you got a weak immune system, man, you better look out for this stuff. So now somebody's dead because of this. And this isn't the first time this has happened either, Ken.
Well, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, they've just reported that one person from California. Has died due to the E. coli outbreak linked to romaine lettuce. The total ill now up to date is from the romaine lettuce outbreak is 121 people from 25 states. Simply just do not eat romaine lettuce until you get the all clear, not in the restaurant, not from the grocery store, and they'll get this under control, and then we'll give the word you can start eating it again.
Yep. All right. Here's another study with regard to living like I do on a farm, near a farm. I laugh when I see this because I think my allergies are exacerbated. My nose is dripping again now, and I got a cough and, you know, stuff that just drives me bananas. But according to this research, I should be experiencing the opposite.
Are you better or worse in California with regards to your allergies? Do they change when you're away from the farm?
A little bit. In February, January, usually my best months are December and January.
But does it matter what geographic location you're in?
Yes, it does.
Where's it better? Away or at?
No, it's better in California.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I don't feel it. But it may be the time of year, though, Ken. I get it, there are certain flowers that come out that are fabulous in the springtime. And spring there is February, where you're around the stuff and you smell it. It smells great, but I begin to feel the essence of it. But you say,
let's talk about this study, because according to this study, it may even have been worse for you in your life if you wouldn't have been near the farm. And this actually is part of what you have intuitively advocated about for many years. Another area where you are ahead of us here, but this, comes out of Occupational and Environmental Medicine this week. Allergy doctors have long known that farm life helps prevent allergies in kids. We've talked about this, but new research, Doug, shows that the benefit might even extend to adults who live near a farm. And this study supports what's known as the hygiene hypothesis. We've discussed this before in this show. This theory holds that early exposure to immune system allergy triggers called antigens actually helps prime the body against developing allergies. And this includes allergies to grass, dust mites, and even cats and dogs.
Really? Cats and dogs.
Correct. And this is why kids who grow up on a farm often have less asthma than kids who don't. And it's the hygiene hypothesis. You know, the kids in the cities or suburbs grow up in incredibly antiseptic environments, and they just don't get these antigen stimulants to get their immune system started. And then when they're older in life and they get exposed, they just get overwhelmingly excessive immune responses, not graded, careful, measured responses as you would if you're getting your immune system learning about these things early on. And that's the whole hygiene hypothesis.
Yep. There's a ruling from the state of Hawaii, Ken, where they want to ban sunscreen because some of the ingredients in it are not good for the ecosystem. So this bill was passed this week prohibiting the sale of sunscreens that have oxybenzone and
octinoxate.
That too. So what are there sunscreens that don't have these chemicals that'll work? Because you think people ought to have sunscreen. So
yes.
How do we fix this?
We're going to have to start filtering out the ones that have these and stay tuned, and I'm sure we'll get a list. But this is so new, and Hawaii is at the head here. Apparently, what they're saying in this bill is that these two chemicals that are found in some sunscreens, certain ones, cause mortality in developing coral, increase coral bleaching that indicates extreme stress, even at temperatures below 87 degrees, and cause genetic damage to coral and other marine organisms. This is the claim from Hawaii, and that's why they're trying to ban these two chemicals.
The paper published a couple of years ago estimates as much as 14,000 tons of this crap gets released into coral reefs every year. Wow. And there are 410,000 acres of coral reef around Hawaii. I love that.
It won't go into effect in Hawaii, the law, till 2021.
Yeah. Well,
And it's actually opposed by the Hawaii Medical Association. Interesting.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, that is. So as Ken is a cardiologist, let's continue the focus on cardiology, heart health, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The stroke that comes about as a result of what really does cause, review for people, what causes a stroke in the first place to take place?
There are two different kinds of strokes. One is similar to what happens in the heart, where you have a blockage in the circulation, and then you get a total blockage and blood can't flow. And that causes about 75 to 80% of strokes. And then you also get strokes because you get clots that form from sometimes, for example, an irregular heartbeat in the pumping part of the heart becomes irregular, and that can cause a clot. It projects itself to the circulation, to the brain, and that causes inadequate flow also. So that's the other about quarter of the strokes.
The description. All right. So the question comes in the review of one of the studies this week, whether or not going into a sauna could help you reduce the risk of having a stroke.
Well, there's good news. Because this comes out of the medical journal Neurology this week, that enjoying regular saunas could actually significantly reduce stroke risk, Doug. Saunas, they lower mental stress and they lower blood pressure. We know this from previous studies. And other studies have shown that saunas reduce dementia risk and decrease the risk of cardiovascular disease-related death. But the news this week is that people who had saunas were 4 to 7 times per week, they were 60% less likely to have a stroke than those who only enjoyed one sauna per week. How saunas might provide this stroke protection is probably due to the blood pressure lowering effect of a sauna. So go enjoy saunas. It seems like the more the better.
Really? Wow. All right, so Ken, where you have a heart attack and where you live are two things to consider. I don't know which comes first, the chicken or the egg here. If you come from a family that likes, like you've got heart problems, do you move to a state where you're liable to get quicker attention?
Let's talk about this. Heart attack patients get their blocked heart arteries open faster, Doug, if they live in states where they can be taken directly to hospitals that perform the specialized procedure. Not all hospitals can provide the treatment. It's called percutaneous coronary intervention, or PCI. So some states permit emergency medical responders to take heart attack patients directly to a hospital that offers PCI, even if that means bypassing hospitals that are closer. It seems that state-level policies should allow emergency medical services to take patients directly to the PCI-capable centers.
So do we have, what's the best state in the country according to this? Where's the best place to live?
It just varies. Some states allow you to go directly to these PCI-capable centers, and some states, they require that you must go directly to whatever hospital is closest.
That's interesting, isn't it? Huh? Well, if they don't have any PCI centers around, you better get to a hospital fast, it would seem. Dr. Ken Kronhaus here.
This program was edited by Bob K. Sound and Recording. Visit bobksound.com.